Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Richardson, and today I am putting the AP in Happy, where accounts payable teams are empowered to protect the vendor master file from fraud. This podcast will give a voice to accounts payable team members by talking about the growing reality of cyber attacks in their world and which vendor setup and vendor management techniques they can apply to protect the vendor master file from fraud. Visit the Vendor Process Training Center to enroll in your choice of 55 plus training sessions that will help you and your team avoid fraud, compliance fines, and bad vendor data. Or just sign up to get access to vendor process FAQs and to attend weekly drop-in live Q&A sessions. Visit training.deborahrrichardson.com today. The link will be in the show notes. A particular type of check fraud and Ponzi schemes have something in common. We're talking internal fraud today with one example of how employees can perpetrate check fraud and why it can get out of hand, just like a Ponzi scheme. Keep listening. Welcome to episode 264, Internal Fraudster. Check fraud acts like a Ponzi scheme. So first of all, let me just explain, because this topic and this example really is not accounts payable. It's really accounts receivable. However, it is a part of internal fraud, and I am studying for the Certified Fraud Examiner or CFE credential, and it talks a lot about, or a lot of the subject matter is on internal fraud, which, you know, you listen to my podcast, you've probably seen other of my content. I always talk about external fraud, and so I want to get this designation or the certification so that I would be certified in both external fraud and internal or occupational fraud. And the organization that issues the certification, if I said that right, is the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, or ACFE. And I mention them all the time. They have an annual report called Report to the Nations. And so I will, in my content, in some of my training classes, I talk about their metrics, especially on the behavior characteristics or traits of a fraudster. And those report to the nations, they come out every year. They're very interesting. But in any event, so now I am getting certified and I am studying for these four tests. And the first one I have next week. So if any of you guys know me, see me, talk to me, email me, ask me how I did. But I am studying tonight and my mouth is just dropped with all of these different types of frauds that these employees have perpetrated against, right, their victim companies. And so one of them, though, I thought, wow, that can really be complicated. And it reminded me immediately of Bernie Madoff and a Ponzi scheme. Not that he's the only one that's ever done it, but that's what popped up in my head because, you know, that's one of the latest ones we've heard. And I also watched the movie too. So it just popped up in my head. And then I thought, wow, that's very complicated. So I want to go over it in this podcast episode. And I started not to because technically it's on the AR side, the accounts receivable side. And I typically work with the accounts payable side or the purchasing side, whoever creates the vendors or changes or updates vendor information for payments. So AP side versus AR side. But I know a lot of you listeners out there, you handle both sides both AP and AR. And as a matter of fact, next week, I'll be at the IOFM Accounts Payable or AP P2P conference. And last time and this time, they are adding the AR Summit because some of the attendees said, well, you know what? I also handle accounts receivable. Why can't I bring my AR folks there? So, you know what? I may start just including more AR content. And if anyone doesn't know who IOFM is, they are a very large organization that has lots of accounts payable members, but they also have lots of accounts receivable members and procurement members, and they have certifications for all. And so they also have chapters, and I am the chapter of the, let me see if I can get it right, Central Atlantic Region IOFM chapter. Okay, there you go. All right, so more AR stuff. So let's get into, because I've talked way too much, let's get into what this example is for this particular check fraud. But first, I do just want to say what a Ponzi scheme is, just in very layman terms. I know everyone listening probably knows, but the gist of it is that you are taking newly acquired money to replace money that was either stolen or provided to someone else under fraudulent means. And if you remember Bernie Madoff, he said that he was investing money, but he wasn't. He was just paying returns based on getting new money in. He'd take that money and then pretend like he was actually good, right, in investing his clients' money, but the returns that they received was just the money that he got in from new people. And that cycle just kept going and going. And so that cycle is what I am talking about today with that check fraud. And it has a name. It's called lapping. And that is when a accounts receivable employee will receive a payment, let's say for customer A, but does not apply that payment, takes that payment, let's say it's a check, and will then do what fraudsters do with checks, right? They will steal it. And so now you have a check payment that has come in from a customer who expects that that check payment to be posted to their account. But it's not. So now what happens? Well, what happens next is before the customer notices that the payment hasn't posted, like before the next statement, then let's say you've got customer B who sends in their payment, but instead of posting it to customer B's account, they will post it to customer A's account. And theoretically, right, they will choose customer B because customer B, right, maybe they get their statement later and customer A's statement is coming out sooner. So you just use customer B's payment for customer A's payment. Well, by the time customer B's payment, right, eventually it's going to be due. And so now you have to cover that one. So then you get customer C, right, that sends in their payment a little bit later. And so now you've got some time before that statement has to go out. And so you apply customer C's payment to customer B's account, and so on and so on. You get to customer Z, you get to customer, I don't know, what is it on the Excel spreadsheet, ZZ. It gets very complicated. And what really got me is they explained that the internal fraudster that's perpetrating this fraud, it gets complicated with them too, to the point where they have to keep a separate set of books just to keep track of the fraud that they're doing, right? It's like a big Ponzi scheme. You're taking the money from someone, from a new funds that are coming in and giving it to or posting it to an existing customer's account. And so big Ponzi scheme, very complicated. And at some point, though, it's got to stop. They've got to get caught. So in this one example, here is how that employee was caught. That employee was caught because the customer complained that it took too long, right, for them to receive a confirmation of their payment. Now, it doesn't mention at all about maybe the customer finding that the whoever endorsed the check, right? Because if you take the check, you got to find a way to deposit it. And the example here didn't talk anything about a customer seeing anything weird on their checks. And so that wasn't the case. It was that they hadn't received the confirmations. But I will tell you, there were a couple of, or there were some red flags that the company missed. And so one of the red flags is that because the fraudster, the internal fraudster, the employee, had this intricate, right, weave of replacing customer payments with new customer payments, right, they did not want to, or they didn't want anyone else to do that job. They insisted on handling all of the steps, which meant handling all the incoming mail, then preparing the deposit, then delivering the deposit to the bank. And that way they could keep up that elaborate, what I call a Ponzi scheme. And those are all red flags for internal fraud. Not to mention, right, during this whole period, did they have time off? Did they not want to take time off? Did they not want to take vacation? Did they not want to take personal time? And maybe if they did, insisting that no one does that process until they come back. So, right, they're forced to take like shorter time off or time away from work. And so one of the preventative controls is to make sure that you do have a segregation of duties. Also that you force people to leave. And while they are gone, other people have to do their job. And when I say force them to leave, I mean force them to take vacation. I don't know if you can force anyone to take personal time, but there really should be a requirement to take vacation at least once a year. And when that person is gone, someone else needs to do that job. But in order for them to be able to do that job, they have to be cross-trained. And I will bet if you've got somebody with this elaborate Ponzi check applying scheme, they're not going to want to cross-train anyone on how to do that. So that could be another red flag as well. Another way to catch it is, I've already talked about, they indicated it was very intricate, right? You go from customer A to B to C to ZZ, right? It gets to the point where the fraudster, internal fraudster, has to keep like a set of records, because it's complicated. And so what they say is that if you check around the fraudster's work area, you may see a separate set of records that are tracking that fraud scheme. And so that's another way that you can catch it. Now, another detective control would be looking at the dates of the customer payments with the dates that the payments were actually posted to the books. And so if there's any discrepancy, if there's a lag time, then that can be an indicator of fraud. And one other thing I want to mention too. So I talked in this example about an employee doing that lapping process, but doing it just in time. So by the time the customer statement came out, they had already replaced it with that next customer's payment. And I suppose that could only work in, right, a specific type of scenario where not all customer statements are going out at the same time. But in any event, if we remember with the Ponzi schemes, it's always, right, in the investment world where they have to create these fake statements. And that is one of the ways that these internal fraudsters can get away with it if they do not have or are not able to cover up, right, post that payment, or maybe all of the statements go out at the same time, or again, they're just not able to post those payments before the statement goes out. And so now they've got to, and they do intercept that statement. And one of the ways they do it is they will go on the customer file and they will change the billing address. So the customer does not get the statement and they are not aware of the fact that their payment didn't post to their account. Now, can we talk about the customer master file? Because it's kind of like the vendor master file, right? In that you should have only those folks that have the ability to edit or add a vendor that does not have the ability to do other things. So on the AP side, they should not be able to post an invoice. They should not be able to add or create a vendor. They should not be able to post a payment. There should be different team members or employees for each of those three steps. Now on the AR side, it sounds like there is a segregation of duties issue because you have an employee that is posting payments, but that employee also has the ability to update the customer record and change, in this case, the billing address so that they could hide their fraudulent actions. If that employee did not have access or would not have had access to change the customer billing address, then that fraud might have been discovered earlier. So a little bit of a deviation on today's podcast episode, but it is talking about internal fraud. And I don't talk enough about internal fraud. And what really got me is I talk a lot about check fraud, external check fraud, but not a lot about internal check fraud. So I thought this would be a great way to address that. It is on the AR side, but I know a lot of you listening have oversight over both AP and AR. So thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the 264th episode of the Putting the AP in Happy podcast, where accounts payable teams are empowered to protect the vendor master file from fraud. Don't forget to check the show notes for the links mentioned in the podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing and writing a review of my podcast on the platform that you use to listen. Stay happy.